So welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great pleasure to see you all here for this event, this exclusive event with Steve Ballmer. We would like to talk about anywhere, anytime. That's the topic of Steve Ballmer. And you could think of that we will talk about the new concept of workaholics. But actually, this topic stresses the fact that we stay in front of a new paradigm, a new era. It is about cloud computing, the possibility that offers cloud computing and its amazing implications of the new world of work. The new world of work, the new world of computing, puts people at the center, making information technology work for them to help make their lives and their businesses easier. First, we will listen to the thoughts of Steve Ballmer on the new world of doing business. After that, we will have a Q&A session with Ask Steve. That's basically the questions you put in at the beginning, questions of the audience. To have a deep dive into the new world of work, Kevin Eva Norton, Program Manager of New World of Work at Microsoft Switzerland, will show you why this topic is everybody's business. And to close this afternoon, Rosemary Lockhurst, a VP from Living Plan IT, will show how with cloud computing technology, cities can become smart and connected. In the name of Microsoft, I wish you a very inspiring afternoon, and I would like now to welcome Steve Ballmer on stage. Steve, please.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to have a chance to be here with you today and get a chance to share a few thoughts and then hopefully have a chance to hear some of the questions and things that are on your minds. I come before you today as a person who is very excited about information technology. I'm very excited about the kinds of things that our company gets to work on, to build, to invent, to create. I'm excited about the pace of what's going on. We're obviously challenged, as all companies are in our industry are, to keep moving and pushing. We've got a lot of products that literally billions of people around the planet are using. We've got some new products like the Windows Phone 7, of which I'm incredibly proud. But we have just a few hundreds of thousands of people using. So in some senses, from billions to hundreds of thousands and everything in between, we have things to be enthusiastic about, things to invent, things to do, and hopefully a lot of things that you'll be excited about personally and things that you can embrace as part of your professional lives and on behalf of your business. The pace of change and evolution and technology advancement in our industry is certainly going to continue to accelerate, which is really quite remarkable, quite remarkable. There are very few industries that after 50 years can say the pace of innovation is still accelerating. I grew up in Detroit, and so I guess car industry very much on my mind. And the auto industry in the early 1900s and probably for 30 or 40 years was extremely fast-paced innovation. And then things slowed down, and in a sense, over the last few years have again accelerated with new materials and new power ideas, the use of electricity. But the information technology industry's room just keeps on going. The phenomenon that's most on my mind right now, and you could say, oh, it's got to be the phone. Oh, it's got to be the Xbox. It's got to be the slate. It's got to be all of those. But there's a theme that really drives the exciting advances that we see, and the theme comes from, if you want to find kind of a an abstract way to express it. It comes from the change that's going as the world of computing really embraces the so-called cloud. And that's really the thing that's changing a lot of what we're talking about here. The cloud really relates to new ways in which devices get created, applications get built, and new ways, essentially new types of applications and new types of experiences that we're going to have. On the back end, we talk about the back end of computing. It's moving out of corporate data centers and into the internet cloud. The way we build big back-end computers continues to change. You know, if you had asked me even 5 years ago, there was sort of a classic view of we've replaced the mainframe with some mini computers and then with PC servers, and we would have said that's the model. Today we're looking at essentially many thousands and thousands of low-cost, very inexpensive computers that manage and run the applications on the back end. They live outside of corporate firewalls. You write applications that might live anywhere in the world. The application may be here in Switzerland, but if it has to be, electronically close to a customer in Indonesia, it figures out how to magically move itself to deliver exactly the right capability at the right time to the right person. That is very important because as we see new internet applications, whether it's Bing or Facebook or Google or any of the popular applications, they could not be built, they could not be managed, they could not be run at the kind of low cost that we see without these modern cloud back-end technologies. That's also facilitating changes in the way we think about the devices that we use. PCs, phones, slates, TVs. Those devices are different. The first applications that live on them are now basically applications that come from the cloud. They come from the internet. Yes, new applications get written for the PC, for the phone, for the slate, for the Xbox. On the other hand, you need to embrace the now millions and millions of applications that have been built essentially with the cloud as the platform. Now, there's no new Facebook application for iPads or PCs. It was written from the start to be that kind of universal application that really runs everywhere as an HTML application. That means the devices we build, the way they need to embrace internet standards, how applications evolve. There's still local intelligence in these devices. You touch your phone. You type and mark on your PC. You read on your slate. You shout or wave to your television set. It seems like the easiest thing. Hey, Xbox. Football match, and see a list of the football matches that are available on TV that night. So things are changing in these smart, what we call natural user interface devices. They're also changing because their intelligence doesn't need to live inside the device itself. The device can assume it's got the whole world of the internet out there to help it understand you as a user and what you mean. So when I push down on my Windows phone, I push down the button and I say, pizza in Zurich. It knows about me. It knows about the world. If I say, call my wife, it knows to look up locally on the phone her phone number. And if I say, pizza in Zurich, it knows how to look outside and find that and find us. Although we didn't go for pizza last night. It was the Kronenhalle. It was seemed more appropriate than going for pizza in Zurich. Last but not least are the new applications that we'll write. When the mainframe grew up, it only could know about business information. When the PC grew up, it really knew about the information first that lived on my machine and eventually my machine and other machines in my company, or my machine and the world at large through search. What we need to write and what we'll be able to write in the new world is a set of applications that know about all the world's people and all the world's information. Now, if you need to find out, if you're trying to make a decision at work, should we increase the price of our product? You want to really be able to say, I want a spreadsheet that shows me sales of our product in various countries at various prices compared to sales of the competition. Most of that information doesn't live in your business's systems. That lives out in the internet someplace. Today, that would be lots of search queries and copying and pasting and typing. It's not what it should be. When people say they like Facebook, what they're really saying is the ability to bring people together and then build programs that know how to deal with groups of people, that's pretty exciting. But that's not only exciting if you are a teenager and you want to share pictures of a party with your friends. That's exciting if you want to get a group of parents together, perhaps, who share a common interest in a disease, perhaps, or something that afflicts your child. If you have a group of people who are working together on a business project, cross company boundaries, we want to be able to write this new class of application based upon the fact that in the cloud, all of the world's information and people are available to us. So there's innovation coming on in these big areas. I talked about them. Let me just kind of emphasize some of the changes. On the back end, now, if you think about it, those of you who work in IT organizations, you think about it. One of the classic things is somebody needs to write a program to run the business. They write it, and then they come, sometimes too late, and they see the guys who are responsible for running the data center, and then they have to say, I need 6 servers and this and that and the other thing, and it turns out it's chaos. You want to be able to build that application and deploy it. You want to be able to have it work for 5 people, but if you need to, for 5,000 people. The one I like at Microsoft of that characteristic is the annual employee review program. It gets 0 usage, 11 months a year, and then it gets incredible usage, 1 month a year, and then gets 0 usage again. That's an internal application. I'll bet the tax filing application, though, in most countries, looks the same. How do you scale these things? How do you give reach? We've worked with some of our new technologies in this cloud back-end area, which we call Azure, Windows and SQL Azure. We've worked here in Switzerland with Sobeys, the social media company. They've been able to grow, scale, and volume at very low cost. We've had a chance to work in some of these areas with Swisscom. They've built out with us a set of communications and collaboration technologies that are hosted inside the cloud. Deployment management. In our Bing search service, we have about 250,000 servers. We can't have people touch every server. If you're going to manage a lot of the world's information, you're going to have hundreds of thousands of machines. It has to be essentially no cost to deploy new software and to manage it. And of course, in this day and age, these things need to be done with great cost efficiency and great energy efficiency. And we're innovating with our Windows Azure program in order to get there. Some of you will say, I'm not ready to go to the cloud. That's not me, not yet, not now. We need more security, or my boss says I better be able to show him the machine that's got our information on it. I understand that. And in the interim, before people are ready to move, we're going to try to bring these same benefits then to our Windows server with Hyper-V virtualization. That's kind of the approach to get there. I talked about the next generation of devices. I probably talked about the next generation devices enough, but just a small show of hands. How many of in the audience have seen one of the new Xbox Kinects? Show of hands if you've seen it. Maybe 25% if I'm lucky. I encourage you, the rest of you, to go into your favorite store. I don't know, MediaMarkt, whatever your favorite is, and at least take a look at the new Kinect. It's a camera and a set of cameras and microphones that you put on top of your TV set with an Xbox. If you want to play football with a friend who's in another city, virtual football, say, I don't know, somebody in Aarau. My uncle lived in Aarau. So, okay, somebody in Aarau, and you want to play virtual football, you go like this, you kick the ball. Camera recognizes your foot, the direction, the speed. It projects the virtual football over the internet to your friend who hopefully doesn't get there fast enough, and you score a goal electronically. You want to browse through the TV listings? You just browse. The machine recognizes your hand, your actions. I encourage you to take a look because it's the future. It's a shape of something I think that's important to come. Not just at home, but also at work. Increasingly, you can envision the scenarios. We already have researchers who have actually worked with surgeons so that they can control, for example, the angle of the X-rays while they're performing surgery without having to leave. They can just tilt their head or make a small gesture in order to control the views and presentation of information in the operating theater. But rather than just talk, we want to have a chance to show you our new Windows phones. Windows phone shipped about 4 months ago. It's got a very different kind of user interface than any of the other phones out there. We're going to have a chance to show that to you. You might say, why do we need a Windows phone? Why? I think the world needs two things. Number one, we want to be able to bridge your life for the over a billion people on the planet who use Windows. We want to be able to help you bridge more and more seamlessly between your life on your PC and your life on the phone. And number two, the world is ripe for innovation in integrating what you really want together as opposed to driving you to thousands of applications. Applications are great. Integrating those applications are better. And I hope you'll see a little bit of that in the demonstration we're going to show you today. We did make an announcement that I think is significant and puts a point on this with Nokia. They've announced that they're going to adopt this experience, this software, is their primary smartphone platform, and I think that ought to give you something of a sense of its importance given the fact that Nokia is the leading seller of phones in the world. So please welcome Massimo Arroy. He's going to have a chance to do a little bit of a demonstration of Windows Phone 7 for you. Massimo.
Hi, James. Hello. Also from my side, a warm welcome. I just need a couple of seconds to set up my demonstration. Okay. There's usually some moments to see it should work. Yes, come on. Just one moment. Yes, here we are. Lucky me that it works. Okay, I would like to show you in this short demonstration the three key elements of Windows Phone. These three key elements are the start screen with the live tiles, the Windows 7 hubs, and then how you can get things easier and faster with Windows Phone 7. So the first thing that you see when you switch on your phone is the start screen with the live tiles. So you can easily navigate on the start screen. You can change the position of your tiles very easily, as you can see here. You can also change the color of the live tiles and customize your start screen as you want. So the live tiles, the elements that you see on the start screen, are dynamically updated. So in this example of my phone here, it's my personal phone, you see that I have two unanswered calls today. I have two emails on my private email account, Hotmail account, and 26 emails on my business account. I see also that I have three messages, SMS or MMS, that I didn't show, answered right now. So these live tiles can be different elements. It can be also apps that you position on your start screen, or contacts, like here on the bottom, I have two contacts, one of Daniel, a colleague of me, and you can see that on his live tile, I see his name, and also his picture. And if Daniel would make an update on your social network, Facebook, Windows Live, or whatever, then also in this case, on the live tile, right now, he did an update. He is here in the audience. He made a picture, and he posted this picture on Facebook. And now I have it right now on my start screen, directly the information that he wanted to send to me. The same would happen on an app. I have here three new apps of Windows Phone 7. Everybody knows these providers, I think. And if one of these apps would have a status update that I programmed this to have it on my start screen, then the status update of the app would also appear directly on the live tile of the app and so on the start screen. Six of these tiles that I have on the start screen are so named hubs. So what is a hub? Imagine a hub as a single location in which you have all information, all related information and experiences. In Windows Phone 7, we have six hubs. On the top, you have the people hub. Then if I scroll down, I see the gaming hub with Xbox Live that connects me to the world of gaming. You can see also my avatar popping up on the tile. Then you see the music video hub in which I can manage all my music and videos. Then the marketplace with which I can access to application and download application from our marketplace. Then the picture hub. I shortly enter in the picture hub just to show some great picture that I made last week in my holidays. And in this hub, I can manage all my picture if they are locally stored on the phone or posted on my social network. This is a single place, as I said before, in which I can manage all the experience around of picture. Then if I go back on the start screen, I have at last position the office hub in which I can manage all my office documents, I can access to my business SharePoint or synchronize my OneNote with my PC. So let's enter now in one of these apps. I would like to show you the People app. If you enter in the People app, you have as first the recent contacts. Also here, updated with the last information on the tile with the picture and other information related to this contact. I can scroll through. I can see here all my contacts. Of course, I can search a contact. Here it is. Then I have here the profile of this contact with all his profile information from all social networks that are connected with the phone. And when I go back to the People Hub, I scroll through, then I am in What's New. And What's New, this is very, very cool. Because in What's New, I see all the social network updates of all my contacts. So I can scroll here through the social network updates. And you see here, we have one of my Facebook friends is the Microsoft Schweiz site on Facebook. And here I have the newest picture posted by our PR department regarding today's event. I can also go here to a colleague. I just look to Daniel. I can touch on the picture. And then, without to open another application, a dedicated Facebook application, for an example, I can now enter a feedback to Daniel and post this directly within the People Hub. And the amazing thing, as I said before, is that I don't need to go and open another application. I can do this directly within the People Hub. So now I go back to my start screen, and I would like to show you some examples how you can do things easier and faster with Windows Phone 7. An example is you receive a document with an email, and you would like to forward only a part of it via SMS to another partner. So I enter now in my email account. I go to an email with a document. I download the document. This takes a couple of seconds. Yes, now it is here. I open. This is a Word document. I'm now in the Word application of Windows Phone. I select the text I would like to have. I copy. I go out, and I select an SMS, a new one, and I paste what I wanted to send. I select the contact. Oops. Daniel Furger, here it is. And I sent now this portion of text that I copied from my email document. So another example how I can do things easier and faster and in an integrated way in Windows Phone is when I want to visit a customer and I would like to see his location on a map. So I select the customer in his profile. In his profile I see his address. It is in Frankfurt actually. And in Bing Maps I have here his location. You can see it's really in Frankfurt, his location shown on the Bing Map. Now I could go one step further and also get the direction from my location where I am, and so I have the direction to join him in Frankfurt. Another thing, the last thing that I would like to show you how you can do things easier and faster is if you want to select to call a contact using the tell me function. So it's a voice command that I can use to call a contact in my phone. So I just push my Windows button. Call Primo Mobile.
Calling Primo MRI Mobile.
I receive a voice answer, and now the phone is calling Primo. So these were only a short demonstration to show you the design highlights of Windows Phone, the start screen, the live tiles, the hubs, and how you can examples on how you can do things easier and faster with Windows Phone 7. Thank you very much.
Pizza. Zurich. It's working. It's exciting for us to bring to market a very different kind of a phone. And oops, it really is working. It didn't catch that. Try again. I think I didn't get close enough. It's fun to bring a product like this to market. It's very different. It works very different. We have an opportunity from this structure to really build. The truth is people spend about 85 to 90% of their time in the applications that are actually built into the phone. And one of the things we're trying to do is have a way to, through this so-called hub architecture that we showed you, we're trying to have a way for application vendors not only to build their own applications, but to have their applications integrate seamlessly and easily with the things that are built into the phone so that we get greater use and more popularity of the great capabilities of the Windows Phone from the beginning users. I talked a little bit at the beginning about the new generation of applications that are being written that know about people and data, so I'm not going to belabor that. I just want to wrap up with a few remarks. We have a mix of people in the audience. We have technical people and business people. We've got people who are here primarily thinking about kind of their own use of technology, and people who are thinking about it on behalf of their businesses. And I don't care where you sit in that spectrum. The things that we will drive with change, with Windows phones, with Xbox, with Azure, with the work that we're doing in Microsoft Office to help people be more productive and communicate more efficiently, I think will be amazing. We will work our hardest around the world, and specifically our staff here in Switzerland, to bring those innovations to market, to let you see them, touch them, feel them. And for those of you who are on the technical side of the business, for those of you who are trying to drive business value, we'll work very hard to make sure we support you as you bring exciting new solutions and applications to the market. It's my pleasure to have had a chance to address you today. I think I'll have maybe an opportunity for a couple of quick questions that people had a chance to write in. If I don't get to something that's on your mind, my email address is steveb@microsoft.com. Feel free to shoot me a mail. It'd be a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Now we have the opportunity, or I have the opportunity, to pose some questions of the many questions you basically posted on the web recently, but we only have time for 5 questions. I would like to start first with a question, and you already touched upon this topic of the data center in a local location and basically inside one country. And the question goes like this: are there any plans to closer work together with partners to provide local data centers in the countries? It has to do with privacy and all that.
We certainly have technologies with Windows Server and Hyper-V today, and eventually even what I might call a Windows Azure private version, in which we will work with both customers and business partners here in Switzerland and in other countries in order to have technologies that can be controlled by geography or by someone who is not a Microsoft employee. I think there'll be, you know, interest. That's important. I also think there'll be an interesting tension between global services and that which is hosted locally. We're going to facilitate both. But in a sense, I think we'll see even greater speed in the public cloud offerings, but we're going to make both of those available. I certainly think there are customers today who trust their stuff to the global cloud, and yet there's certainly businesses, mostly governments today, that very much we're going to want to have their information and protect it in a given country.
The next question is around the search engine space. Basically, the question goes like this: why does Microsoft participate in the search engine space? Probably the economics behind that and the importance of the rest of the business might be also part of the question.
Well, if we made money doing it, I don't know that I'd get that question. Right now, we're losing money, that is, investing in search as an opportunity. And we do that both because we see an opportunity to innovate, but there is a fixed cost that you need to bear to be in the search business. It doesn't matter if you have one customer or 1 billion customers. You do have to have servers that every second of every day are looking at every website in every part of the world to try to decide what's new, what's interesting, what's fresh, what's relevant. That's actually got to happen no matter how many customers you have. I think that's important, not only because we have an opportunity to innovate, not only because we have an opportunity to make money at search, but in a sense, that's a core capability, we think, for a lot of other things that we want to enable. I'll go back to Massimo's phone here. One of the most interesting and important things about the phone is, oops, I don't know your PIN code, but is in fact the way it integrates and helps you find other information in the world. You saw that in mapping and some of the other areas. So we do think that it's a super important area, and that's why we are investing heavily.
Well, the next one is an interesting question. It goes basically like the one device question. With the computing power of today's smartphones, shouldn't it be possible to build a smartphone which would also be my PC?
Sure. Someday. No, it's all a question of trade-offs. I mean, today, if you take a look at what Apple's done with the iPad, it's not good enough to be your PC. It's good enough to be something else. Same thing with the phone. There are trade-offs between power consumption and power and capability of the machine. There are trade-offs between screen sizes and a variety of other things. You know, is it possible someday that we'll carry a device like that, we'll speak on it, and when you throw it down on the table, it can work with bigger screens and keyboards, or maybe it even will have a keyboard that somehow folds out virtually and allows you to do other things? Yeah, we envision actually quite a few possibilities. There's no question that we're going to have something that's got a processor in it that goes in our pocket. And the question is, will we want and need all the other processors in our lives? My guess is they'll be cheap enough as to not be the big issue. But I do think the design point the questioner asks about is an interesting one.
I would like to close with the last question, and this is really a big question in terms of it. In 2020, the world population will be an internet generation. What will be the future of information and communication look like? So this is really one of the big ones.
Well, at any point in time, there's always something that people will tell you is not going to be popular because ... You know, the world's not ready for it. Well, almost any idea that's interesting, the world is at least ready for 20 years later when the population has aged. I actually remember about 15 years ago, I was involved trying to sell email to a large European bank, not based in Switzerland. And we were competing with Lotus Notes, and would we win, would we lose? Finally, the call comes from the CIO. Steve, we're not picking up Exchange. I said, they beat us, huh? You're going with Lotus and IBM. He said, no, we're not going to put in email. I said, what? What do you mean you're not going to put in email? He said, well, we decided that the CEO and his direct reports weren't going to use it. And if they didn't use it, nobody else would either. Well, okay, we can all laugh now. It wasn't really that funny. I mean, even now, people say things like, can we really use computers in all the schools? Are teachers, today's teachers, really ready to have computers be a fundamental part of the way we teach? And I think sometimes the answer comes back, no. There's just too much sort of getting over the hump culturally. Teachers are still used to. I was in a school in Cloten today. Very good, very advanced teacher. We were out doing some work on internet safety for children. But I noticed they still had a whiteboard. And it's a new school, but they even still had a blackboard. Not just a whiteboard, but a blackboard. And this is a modern school, great teacher. But the notion literally that you're going to bring, you know, your big screen, medium-sized screen to every class, you're going to take notes, you know, that every student, the curriculum, that the teachers are going to understand that and love that, that's still a little bit foreign. And so by 2020, call that the decade by which everybody will be internet generation, I think things will have flipped. So even today, we can say, as technology and the internet becomes more native to all of us. There are things today that people won't accept that they'll very much accept over the course of the next 10 or 15 years. Email's not it today, but there's still plenty of people who say social networking is not for me, and yet we just need to make it more approachable and more professionally relevant, I think, for some of the people who say things like that. And we're working hard to do that in our own office and business product line.
With that, thank you, Steve. I'll give you a big hand to Steve for this.
Thank you all very much.